But I'ma say what I feel, and I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Red Room.
Well, you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminishing, the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed. In the rent room, we let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes, that's Mr. Bolakaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the crap of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want.
Welcome to the Red Room.
What's up, y'all? It's your boy, Hilliard Guest. Shut up, Linnell.
That was smooth.
Like, that was cool, huh?
Yeah. You go kind of wipe your mouth and start talking. Yeah.
Way stupid.
I'm not even looking at
him. I'm just going to repeat it, okay? What's up, y'all? It's your boy, Hilliard Guest, and you guys are listening to the Screenwriters Rant Room, where we keep it real, we keep it opinionated, and we keep it what, everybody?
2016.
Linnell really ain't going to look at me either. She's
No, I'm back. You have a gorgeous... No, for the people out there, that you know, we're recording here in your office, and you have a... it's a lovely view from your window, and I'm facing it.
I know.
Forever. We're going to think positive in 2016. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's going to have his office forever. Yeah.
Well, for the listeners out there, my office is over here at the Lot Studios in Hollywood, and we're right next to OWN. We're like, what, 100 feet from OWN?
That view is going to change a little bit.
Yeah, so
slightly.
She's building a new building. Yeah. It's going to look just like the one she got.
As billionaires tend to do, to build things.
That's cool, but like guys will. I'm going to have a couple more dollars to get my office in her building.
Okay.
How you like that?
Okay.
That's positive thinking. I like it.
Fuck with me.
I'm not. Right. I'm not.
Then I'm going to have that view right there. Okay. I got a partial view of the mountains, okay? Right now, but as soon as she moves and I get over there, I'm going to have a full view.
That's a plan. Bitch. That's a plan. That's a strategy.
That's the plan.
So you guys know how we do it on the Rant Room. On this show, we discuss entertainment, TV, film, music, culture. But our focus is always screenwriting, stories, craft, and shit like that. So you guys here, everybody, we got on the show today.
Yes.
My girl, Lisa Bolakaja, the street nerdist, the pimp doll.
Yeah. The Mississippi
goddamn. The OG dreadlock.
The Mississippi goddamn. A.K.A. Indian Red, isn't killing them dead. What?
Okay. That's a whole bunch of hyphens in there, girl. Look.
I got something for every season.
Lisa Bolakaja, and sitting in with us today.
Yes.
Our other home team, our cousin, our OG.
Aw, that's so sweet.
Zombie Nation, Army Wives.
Okay. Yeah.
Big time.
Pilot.
Big time.
I do it all.
Yeah.
I do it all.
Yeah. Writer, director, producer, my girl Linnell White, y'all.
Hello, everyone. Hey, and thanks to everyone that since I was on here first time, you know, people hit me up on Twitter and some people hit me up in person and said, hey, I really enjoyed your episode. So thank you to those folks.
You were spitting game on that one.
I try, you know, I know a little something. I don't know everything though. But I'm just honest too. I mean, the struggle is real.
Yes.
And so I'm not gonna try and hide that, you know, things are easy or out here or there's not difficult times. And there are. So yeah.
That's honest. What's up.
So
hold on, before we get in. Hold on, before we get
in. Because I know, I'm feeling this tension in the room. Because
there is tension in the room.
I get the feeling that when we start getting to the chop up, we're not all going to be on the same page. So I'm just prepping myself with my hot cocoa.
I don't know. I have no idea where you're coming from.
I don't know, because here's the good thing. So we're going to do the chop it up. But the thing is, we didn't discuss, just so the audience knows, we didn't discuss our opinions yet.
Right.
We figured we wait till we were all in the same room together, and then we'll see what happens.
Yes.
Okay.
So Linnell said, hey, guys, why don't y'all do one on Star Wars and, you know, The Hateful Eight and all that stuff like that. So I was like, okay, well, let's do a chop it up. You know, where we just talk about all kind of shit. So we might talk about those and some other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go in.
Okay.
If y'all grown.
Mm-hmm.
But did you have something you want to say first? Or
No, it was just that.
That you feel tension in the room.
Like, we're not all going to be on the same page.
And that's fine. That's fine.
Okay.
We're all professionals. And
but
we
I felt like it's like the two of you are on the same page.
No.
I said we were going in last night.
You know, Hilliard and I were somewhere at an event last night, and we crossed paths, and we discussed it briefly, but we were like, all right,
she was having a deep conversation with
another gentleman. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh. Ooh, interesting.
And I came in and I was like, oh, y'all bitches talking about Star Wars.
Wait, what fancy shindig were you guys at this time?
It wasn't fancy.
It was at home, but it was a lot of EPs and some people in there. Gotcha. It was a shout out to Peter Bunch. It was his little party that he had.
Nice.
And
hi, Peter.
So today.
Yes.
So today we're going to do a little thing we call the Hollywood Chop It Up. Mm. And what that is any fucking thing we feel like talking about, bitch, we're just going to talk about it.
Okay.
We're going to start off talking with Star Wars and Hateful Eight, and let's see what we roll to.
Okay.
Cool.
All right.
So let's go into Star Wars. So we've all seen the movie. We are a couple weeks out. We know everybody's seen it. It's made $800 million.
Being very polite, because you know my rule. You got to see it the first weekend. Correct. I give you 3 days.
Spoiler alert, people. Spoiler alert. If you have not seen it.
This is your fault.
But here's the thing. It's already January.
Yes.
We're
a month out.
If you didn't see it.
People have not seen it 5 times to your one.
Right. So
we're done.
Just letting you know ahead of time, there's spoiler alert. So if you haven't seen either of those two movies, you might want to pause and wait till you see those movies and then come back.
Come back and listen to this at a later time.
No, the bitches should have read. They should have seen it already.
But I have to tell y'all something. We got our tickets early. And we actually, originally we were going to try to go see the Thursday night, because they had early showings, 4 o'clock in the morning, 6 in the morning. So we went the first day, Friday, at early in the morning, 9 o'clock in the morning.
I didn't do all that.
With a capital H.
And we got there at 7.
Really?
Because it was so packed down there.
Lying around the block.
Yes.
Here.
But the cool thing about it was the theaters had, they had several screenings of it. Mm-hmm. But they said if you got there early, you can actually come inside to the theater and sit for an hour early before the show started. Because they realized, here's the thing, and I have to give much respect to AMC down in Mission Valley.
Yeah.
Because this is my thinking, that there's going to be a lot of older people who remember the show who are going to be coming to watch it, but young people. And a lot of times they can't stand three or four hours.
Good point.
So I think they were really being really cool about letting people come in
accommodating,
early.
Accommodating fans of all ages.
Of all ages and abilities. And, it was really nice. So, we was ready to go. Because when we got there, I'm telling you, the energy was so visceral. The audience was packed. Mm-hmm. It was all ages, all colors, all races, all...
Which is great.
Which is definitely awesome.
Which is what you want to see.
Yeah. And in my humble opinion, I didn't hate the movie,
so we're good.
In my humble opinion, I'm just letting y'all know, I went in with very low expectations.
Okay.
Because, I was there at the theater seeing the original when I was a little kid. Mm-hmm. Like, the original first one.
Yeah.
So I grew up with that all the way up to Return of the Jedi.
Yeah. Sure.
I will say this, in my opinion... Mm-hmm. The next three they did after that were trash.
Well, you like Empire Strikes Back, right?
I love Empire Strikes Back.
I'm talking about the three after.
I will put in a good word for Revenge of the Sith, episode 3, I thought was the strongest of the prequels.
I gave up.
I'll put in a good word for that one.
This is what I'm looking at it. I'm going to treat those sequels, the Clone Wars and all those three, like
the prequels.
Later. The prequels, yeah. That's right. I'm always getting confused. Yeah. When I say the original three, I'm talking about the ones from the 70s.
Yeah, you're
80s.
Talking New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, episodes 4, 5, and 6. Just to clarify.
But I'm going to treat it like The Godfather, where, there are 3 Godfather movies, but we only recognize 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. But because this movie, when I saw it, I don't have to count those other 3 ones in the middle. So I went in with very low expectations for The Force Awakens. And I was pleased. It gave me what I needed. It didn't answer a lot of questions I may have. I'm hoping that it's going to be answered in the next couple sequels. Mm-hmm. But it gave me the nostalgia factor. It gave me...
What did I say last night? That's one of the... I don't mean to interrupt you. But that's one of the one things that I said last night was it played to the fanboy and girls.
Yeah.
That's what it played.
Right. Nostalgia, for sure. Yeah.
But also, they didn't let those characters dominate that story. They let the newbies come in and kind of have their moments.
Kill Han Solo with that bitch.
And I love the fact that it was, of course, John Boyega. Mm-hmm. And smart move on J.J. Abrams' part. As you know, he saw Attack the Block. And even before Star Wars came, you see the GIFs? I think maybe like a year ago, we kept tweeting those pictures where somebody put the lightsaber and attacked the block when he was running and stuff. And people were like, and of course, when all the backlash was coming through with people saying, why is he a black stormtrooper? As if Lando Calrissian wasn't in movies.
Yeah, but I mean, to follow because we're coming off the prequels and it's established in Attack of the Clones that the stormtroopers are clones of Jango Fett.
Right.
So you have to then explain to the fans, okay, how do we get from the clone army? When did we start using actual men? Because I'll buy that they did use actual men in the stormtrooper costumes at some point, somewhere before episode 4 that happens because
they're almost saying like he was like born into it, like right.
They were orphaned, which I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it did what it's supposed to do. And of course, the fine. And I've always known this, mm-hmm. and I'm just glad that the world can like appreciate my taste.
Harrison Ford,
no. Oscar Isaac.
Oh yeah.
Oh, good Lord, that man. Oof. Now in this one, he's such a great actor. Like in every movie he's been in, he's different.
And let's just say what is he like Dominican and Cuban or something?
He is Guatemalan
and Cuban.
Cuban, yeah. And French.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
And that is a nice mixture.
So he's the Poe.
He's Poe Dameron. Yeah. And you know, the girl Ray was good, but mm-hmm. I think as a whole,
I liked
unit,
her a lot.
I think they all work well together. Mm-hmm. So you got the nostalgia factor. I really like the new characters, and also I think. I appreciate the fact that you really didn't need to have seen any of the other movies to come into this movie and just watch it.
Because it brought them all back.
Well, they rehashed the entire plot.
I'm talking about people who were never into Star Wars, like the really young people who mm-hmm. may have seen like, you know, the early ones because their parents were watching it. You know how it is when you're young and you're seeing these movies. I felt like you could come in and not know anything about Star Wars and actually feel like you're a part of this movie.
Yeah, I think so to an extent. Yeah, to an extent.
But... my overall impression, okay. I was pleasantly surprised. It gave me my feelings.
How many times have you seen it?
I saw it 3 times.
I saw it.
What I tell you, them fans are always, they don't be playing.
No, I saw it the first time with, you know, my friends for nostalgia, and it was better for me the second time. Okay. Because the stress of the first one, mm-hmm. I had gotten through it, mm-hmm. then I can enjoy it. And the third time is because my sister hadn't seen it. And I'm like, I'm going to take you to go see this movie.
This is why this movie made 800 something.
Yeah, because
you.
It didn't make a penny off me. You want to know where I saw it?
Right.
Okay. So over the holidays, of course, I'm originally from New York. Mm-hmm. So I went home to visit the family.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, what Star Wars screenings are happening? Because I got that email from Disney.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And they had one happening in New York City at the DGA.
Okay.
So I took my sister. We sat in the front row at the DGA on
the 57th
Street, mm-hmm. right by Carnegie, next to Carnegie Hall. I was like, wow, I'm at the DGA. Mm-hmm. DGA Theater in New York. That's kind of cool. So we went and saw it the day after Christmas. And
that's exactly when we saw it.
I was disappointed in the film from top to bottom.
Really? Okay.
She is a Star Wars hit.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Let me just start with the rehashing of so many plot devices that we've seen before. We've seen someone put plans in a droid before.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we did that with BB-8, to me, BB-8 is something created to sell toys.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's have this cute little thing that looks like Wall-E roll around, and the kids will go crazy and buy BB-8 mm-hmm. through the roof. Mm-hmm. Okay. We've seen the Death Star concept, not once.
But twice.
And we're doing it again, but we're going to call it a different name.
Right. Mm-hmm. The Star Killer.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, fine. Which, if you look at Lucas's original script for episode 1,
it was called
Star Killer. Right. So now we're just sort of, okay, we're stealing from there, a little bit of everywhere. I did not appreciate, okay, we've kind of gone 30 years from the time Return of the Jedi ended, mm-hmm. right? And at the end of Return of the Jedi, I mean, Ewoks are dancing. We've squashed the Empire. Yes. We're literally using Stormtrooper helmets as drum, mm-hmm. you know, kits. So we're 30 years later, and you tell me the Empire is still so strong that they have formed the First Order, and the Rebellion is back being the Resistance? Mm-hmm. I could not buy that.
Mm.
If you had told me the Empire is some sort of insurgency, the remnants of it, like what the books have done, you know, if you told me the Empire was like scattered about and trying to collect things and sort of doing these guerrilla strikes mm-hmm. all over, I'd be like, yeah, I get it, because they were beaten down so bad mm-hmm. after Return of the Jedi. That's mm-hmm. what you can do in 30 years.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But to be at this level where they've got fleets and the stormtroopers and my man in the uniform, always a British white dude in a uniform, giving a speech to the masses of mm-hmm. stormtroopers. Like, how did they get all this? Because they were squashed.
Mm-hmm.
Had major issues with Rey as a character. Mm. She could do everything. She could speak to Chewbacca. Nobody talks to Chewbacca but Han Solo. Yeah. She could speak to BB-8, even though she's
But didn't she develop learning how to do that because she started getting the Force or whatever shit?
I don't know. It wasn't clear to me.
Because of where she was and because she was trading but and how would she with know so many different people.
How would she know to, I mean, to talk to Chewbacca? I'm just like,
there might have been some.
I thought because just like Luke originally started getting powers, I thought she started getting powers.
She does get powers, but I mean, Luke always needed a translator with Chewbacca. I know in the first one, he didn't know what Chewbacca said.
And come on, it's Chewbacca. Do you really need a translator?
Yeah.
I had to look
but she
like,
could do everything.
Ooh,
this girl.
So you're basically she's a Mary Sue.
She was a Mary Sue, and that's been argued on Twitter. I mean, I'm not gonna rehash all that, this girl could literally jump in a Millennium Falcon and just fly it, you know, like, whatever, no problem.
Kind of
it's like that takes time, and she's able to do a force pull on a lightsaber. Mm-hmm. Luke wasn't doing that till Empire Strikes
Back.
That's
better. Women are better.
You can make the art, but to me, she was just like not a complicated protagonist. I mean, when you want strong female characters, that doesn't mean that they can do everything that and she's saving
and
Finn
from
the alien. She can take down a Sith Lord, a trained Sith Lord in a lightsaber battle that she's just now picking up a lightsaber. Mm-hmm. No, JJ, no. Okay, I don't buy it.
Wait. But because you read the books and stuff too, right?
Well, I read there was a trilogy that came after. It was like the Grand Admiral. There was a Grand Admiral Thrawn. Where it was like Empire. It was years ago. Mm-hmm. The Empire was like in pieces, and they were just trying to get it together. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's what I would have bought instead of this. They're the First Order, and Princess Leia Organa is with the Resistance, and I'm like, well, this is just a rehash of what we've already seen. Mm-hmm. I was really disappointed in the film.
How was the audience in the place with you, the DGA?
Well, you know, I mean, older, they clapped at certain points. Mm-hmm. I mean, they clapped when they saw Han Solo. They clapped when she did the force pull on the lightsaber. But by then, I had kind of checked out of the movie because I'm like, you killed Han Solo in the way you did it.
Yeah, I was done when they
I was
did that.
Done. I was finished with you.
But I immediately put on my screenwriter hat or my industry producer hat. Mm-hmm. And I went, so Harrison Ford said, I'm going to give you one.
Yeah.
I'll give you one more episode.
And let us be frank.
I want $50 million.
Mm-hmm. Let's be frank. I mean, Harrison Ford has always had issues with the Han Solo character. He's come out. It's no secret. He wanted Han Solo dead in Empire Strikes Back. When he went into the carbonite, he was like, okay, that's it. He's dead. Because he felt like the character is not very dynamic and it's not three-dimensional. He didn't want to play anymore. He much preferred Indiana Jones. Mm-hmm. But we do not allow actors to drive our business.
Yeah, right.
So, and then for me, it felt like you had him in the trailer. You had him laced throughout the movie. Mm-hmm. And then the way you offed him by his... skinny,
like paid 60 or something.
His skinny son.
I couldn't stand the son. I'm sorry.
Yeah, the son. He's horrible.
When you had Darth Vader,
even Darth Maul.
Yeah, it's really hard to have an emo,
whiny
son.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say this: the parody account of emo Kylo Ren has made me like the Kylo Ren in the movie now because now they call him emo, you know, the emotionally stunted. Mm-hmm. I couldn't stand him.
He was terrible.
He was terrible. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel frightened.
He kept taking his mask off, which was another issue. Like, don't show your face.
Don't show his face.
And we
face.
See this little hipster, skinny hipster dude.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, as soon as he took it off, I was like, that's the dude from Girls.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm not
scared of him at all.
I'm not scared of him. In fact, I could whip his ass.
And his lightsaber does not make sense. Those crossbars.
And then those
it.
Tantrums.
That's what you guys, that's what I came in. You guys are talking
that
about.
That lightsaber, you got to cut your own wrists off with
come
that.
On. Come on. Mm-hmm.
Why would they change the lightsaber?
They're trying to be stylish and different.
They're trying to be like, we need the update.
But didn't you see the new toy they have where you can design your different lightsabers?
Again,
different ways?
I feel like a lot of this stuff was engineered so we can sell toys.
That's true.
Now, I'm going to take your listeners back because this has happened before.
How far are you going back?
This is nothing new. I'm going back to the first Transformers movie, the animated movie, with the voices of Orson Welles and Leonard Nimoy, God rest his soul. Okay, so those of you who remember that movie, the first 10 minutes of that movie, even though we had been watching Transformers cartoons and no one ever died, when they did Transformers the movie, 84, I believe, maybe it was 85, the first 10 minutes of that movie, Autobots get slaughtered. I mean, it's a not a bloodbath because they don't have blood.
It's an oil bath.
I mean, it all your old favorites. Like, man, you're even gonna kill Ironhide? Yeah. No, you didn't. Mm-hmm. And it was all so they could sell more toys. Yeah. Mm. And I felt like Disney was kind of doing that here. Mm-hmm. R2-D2 and C-3PO.
Yeah, they weren't even needed.
Y'all
to be
off
in the
to
movie.
The side because we got BB-8. We've got a new thing with a lightsaber that's like a crossbar. Mm-hmm. We're trying to push product. Yes.
But that's, my argument to that, which I totally understand, is it's Disney. Disney bought it.
Yeah.
Disney is all about making that money. So like
they're
I said,
smart.
Even though
they're
I had low expectations, I do understand that they're there to do the product stuff. Like I said, I went in with low expectations, but I think in terms of what it needed to do, and I agree with a lot of your criticisms of it, I just think overall, I think it did what it was supposed to do.
Yeah.
And you know, it for me mainly, honestly, it's nostalgia.
Yeah.
And also seeing John Boyega.
Yeah,
and
seeing Oscar a black
No, it's
face.
Awesome that we have some diversity on screen. Yeah. I'm not going to take away from the fact that we have a black male protagonist, mm-hmm. I mean front and center.
Yeah.
Could he
well,
have
she's really
could,
the hero,
could
but,
he
yes.
have been to me I felt his language got a little bit too contemporary because we are in a long long ago in a galaxy far far away. His speech should not sound like a millennial,
but it might be a long long time ago far far away in the future from where we are.
I just didn't buy some of his especially when he was in, oh my goodness, Lupita Nyong'o was wasted in this film. It's just wasted. But yeah, I just felt like there were too many coincidences. Let's mm-hmm. go to the screenwriting. Mm-hmm. Let me put my screenwriting
That's
hat
true.
On for a second.
That's true.
Too many coincidences where Millennium Falcon's been junked on the planet that Rey is on. Okay, mm-hmm. she, you know, flies it out of there, and then Han Solo happens to be nearby,
and
gets on it. It's like, okay, how coincidental. Mm-hmm.
Well,
you know?
Star Wars movies have not been, they're not known for their best screenwriting.
And Poe, who is so hell-bent on, I'm putting these plans on BB-8, BB-8 is my mission, and then he crashes, and then doesn't pursue BB-8 anymore, and then next thing we know, he runs in with Finn at, like, you know, the resistance base. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, man, how you doing? Mm-hmm. Like, I thought you died. Oh, no, that's fine.
Because I read somewhere that originally he was supposed to have died. Like Poe Dameron.
That would have made more sense.
It would have died, but because just Oscar Isaac, mm-hmm. you know, they changed the script around a little bit.
Yeah, so you could tell they changed it around because he's just
back
like,
in.
Perky
he's
jerky.
Strong on the screen. I liked him a lot.
Oh my God.
I liked him.
Yeah.
He was fine.
I
wanted to see more of General Organa for sure.
Her too, personally. I get your point
and Phasma.
On her having that I could do anything syndrome.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, the screenwriting and directing and all that.
Yeah.
But her as a character and the way she played it, I thought, like,
no, I thought the performance
was like
by Daisy Ridley
Longstocking to me. I just liked her.
She was strong.
She was, like,
she was a strong actress given the material. I just felt like you gave her so many skills that it took other people, which we've seen in films, you know, a while to
unless
develop
these
skills.
Unless there was some way they can explain how she was able to get all that.
Right.
Like I said, if that's like a town where you're learning, like she's been raised there, maybe that's a place where different pilots, she's been given lessons. Mm-hmm. She's something.
I wanted her to sell BB-8 so bad because this girl has been scrounging for these little, whatever the currency was they used on the. I mean, obviously she's a scavenger. Mm-hmm. She's skinny. And she could have gotten so much money for BB-8. I was like, sell him.
And it could have been a situation, that the fix for that could have been she decides to go ahead and sell him. And then you can have Finn.
Exactly.
That's the thing.
Exactly. That is exactly where I was going with that. And I was so disappointed that they just sort of like, she has such a heart, she won't get rid of BB-8. It's like, girl's got to eat.
She is hard scrabble. And they already showed you that, you know, she's getting tiny little Instagram.
The dude is really ripping her off. I mean, she's at that counter, whatever. He's giving her a quarter of a ration or whatever.
And she ain't feel sorry for that other robot mofo walking around.
I had a problem with that. She's so smart and so good and can fight. Why would she let him do that to her?
Yeah. Agreed.
She didn't let anybody else in the entire rest of the movie.
I mean, she was able to take
like
out those. I mean, she didn't even need Finn's help. She's taking out the two guys, you know, with her staff. She's real skilled with that staff.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and she didn't need. That was the problem with the character. She did not need anyone's help.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I just didn't buy it. Mm. I just could not get engaged in it. Mm-hmm. I was like, I want to kind of see her work her way through all this, because Luke had to work when he got his new powers. He was just like, what am I doing here? What's happening to me? And she was just like, oh, I know, and I know all the schematics of Millennium Falcon, even though 10 minutes ago I just called this a hunk of junk.
I know exactly how to fix it.
Come on. And then Han Solo offers her a job and it's like, no.
tell us how you really feel.
And then I also think, okay, so there was a premise of Luke is missing. We got to find Luke.
Right.
Oh, God, Luke is... Where's Luke?
Right.
And so the entire resistance, like maps and schematics, how am I going to get Luke? Da, 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 to the point where they don't even talk to...
Millions of people
being killed. They don't even talk to my man Finn about, hey, do you actually know how to shut the shields down? Which is what we did in Return of the Jedi on Endor again.
Right.
Do you even know how to shut the shields down? No one has that conversation with him. They just assume that he knows.
Right.
So then we get this stupid comedic little situation where Han Solo's like, do you know how to do this? No, I was a janitor. That would have been discussed... Back
way
at,
back.
You know, resistance base or whatever.
Right.
Says the pilot. She's like, bitch, you don't fly like
don't
that.
And then, so we finally know where Luke is. We've completed the little pieces in the map or whatever. Okay, we go. And who do we send to go find Luke? We send Rey, who we just met.
Mm-hmm.
After Han Solo's been killed and Leia has like a very little reaction. She's like, you know, she has a little force feel.
Yeah, that's what I didn't understand. Like at the end, wouldn't Leia have been there too?
She would have been crying. She would have gone to see her freaking brother. She would have been there. Right. But she sends this strange girl she just met. She's all hugging Ray.
Right.
Like, oh,
I didn't like her in the movie at all. I thought she was so weak. Yeah.
She wasn't given enough to do.
She just was like,
if you're a general.
She's like, I got 2 days, guys. I got to go write a script because she's busy as fuck with a screenwriter. She's like, I got 2 days. Yeah. She just showed up as like, what do I do again?
Yeah.
Okay, action. Like, she just wasn't there to me. I don't know what it was, but that's just how it felt.
I think a part of them didn't really, I mean, not that they didn't want them there. I just think they just wanted to cater to us fans from the originals.
That's exactly
And then keep it moving with the new.
Right.
You know?
No, I get it. Mm-hmm. I get it. They were walking a tight wire, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I felt like, okay, your husband just died and your brother's missing and you're sending this girl who you just met to go make the final encounter with him.
Right.
With Chewbacca and the Millennium Falcon. I was like, you at least be bringing up the rear Leia,
I thought that was because she knew Leia, that she knew that she was the one who had the real force. It wasn't Finn, it's her.
Right.
That's what I thought.
Right. But still.
Which is why she starts getting more and more powers as she goes
along. Well, you got to remember, Finn was knocked out at the end, so he wasn't going nowhere.
Yeah, he turns his back.
Out of me too.
Yeah. Finn turns his back on a Sith Lord. Yeah. And I mean, he's lucky he didn't get sliced in half.
And then you don't see him again. It's like,
Well, we'll see what happens.
Let me tell you one other little thing that bothered me. And it's just me.
Okay.
And I know it's just me. And everybody out there going to have something to say about it. And I don't give a fuck. Okay. There are times in a movie when I get it. We're in a certain part of the world. So everybody has a fucking American accent. Why did it bother me that Finn didn't have an accent? It bothered the shit out of me.
I would have loved his British accent. I would have loved
Why did we not do that? Why did we take his accent?
She got to keep hers.
And he sounded like a typical
millennial.
Like, corny.
Yeah.
I'm going down to Starbucks.
You know what I mean? Like one of those types. I was like, what fucking accent is that?
I would love to have had him just had how he normally speaks.
Oh, because they don't want two people sounding British, but yet the other dude is British.
The entire First Order and the Empire has always been British. And I was cool. I saw them mixing in some women into the First Order because we've never seen any women on the Empire at all. So I was like, okay, we're mixing it up a little bit. I saw some black characters flying,
some Asian characters,
X-Wings
doing some stuff.
It was great. Mm-hmm. I mean, I appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Thank you. But I didn't love Finn. I felt like he was a lot of like wide-eyed, sweaty, looking around.
Like he had no idea what to do, who he was.
But he knew enough to like, I don't want to be a stormtrooper anymore, which I'm like, that's a great storyline to talk about. Like,
we could have went deeper into that.
Crisis of conscience. Yeah, we didn't go deep enough into that. And he turns, and automatically he has no issues spraying down his boys.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, wait, you were just with them. After years, you've been indoctrinated as a baby. This takes time for you to say, okay.
But I agree.
He was with the resistance. He was with the resistance overnight.
That would have been something where in the script I would have put like maybe he doesn't go to fight. Mm-hmm. He's like he understands that this is what they need, and maybe somebody recognizes him or says something where he hesitant until they start to attack and he realizes I got to make a decision.
I wonder if, and you guys know more about Star Wars than I do. The stormtroopers, are they all totally identical? Like there's no symbol or anything
that
tells you who's
There's different ranks on them. Yeah.
Okay, because I was just wondering I never really noticed it unless it's like the big.
Now, in the first, I'd say in episode 4, they're all kind of generic. But then as the series goes on, you start to see different kinds of stormtroopers. Like when you're on planet Hoth, you get the ice stormtrooper and he's got like a white hood. Mm-hmm. And the Emperor has his special guards. I'm such a nerd. The Emperor has his special guards, man, like in these sexy red outfits. I love the Imperial guards.
Right.
And they even in Return of the Jedi, the ones that look different that were on the bikes.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, they do have different ranks because was it Captain Phasma? She's of obviously a higher rank, you know. And she's
her Gold LeMay.
Which also another critique I had was they corner her, like you're gonna shut the shields down, and so she just does it.
I didn't understand that. Like,
how does that work?
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
She should be like going down the blaze of glory. Like she's Captain Phasma or whatever, and she's silver.
I wish they would have used her a lot more too.
Oh, she was completely underutilized. Yeah. Completely underutilized.
Well, maybe they're going to use her in the next one. Maybe we'll see.
But for me, I feel like it needs to be a standalone film. Do not set up.
Yeah.
Don't give me a film where it's like we're setting up everything for episode 8.
Right.
Because I can sit and watch Star Wars: A New Hope, and it's a complete beginning, middle, and end. I can even sit and watch Empire, even though that's the middle piece, and to me, one of the best movies ever made.
Mm-hmm.
I can still watch the beginning, middle, and end and be like, okay, I've got some closure here. This thing, little girl on top of a mountain shaking, holding a lightsaber to Luke Skywalker. I was like, what is this?
Yeah. Yeah. And then you have the guy that we opened up with in a coma.
Or something. I wasn't even sure what happened to him.
So like,
I wasn't even sure. But his turn was so quick to me in terms of you were with the final, the First Order.
I think then, you're right on to something.
I mean, I and then all of a sudden you're like, I'm with the Resistance. I'm tapping Poe on the back, and we're boys, and I'm gonna go shoot my brothers
and
down.
I think they didn't want to have to deal with that.
No,
you grew up with him since he was.
Yeah, I was like, those are your brothers.
That's a really good point. Mm-hmm. That's a really good.
I mean,
point.
Speaking as someone who is, you know, like worn the uniform, it's right. like, I mean, yeah, I've had days where I'm like, I hate the dude standing next to me right now, but. Right. I mean, I'm not going to shoot them.
Right.
You know, it's like, they're like, they become like your family, like your, right. your brothers and sisters. Right. And yeah, you have fights with them, whatever, yeah. but it's like.
And here's another thing that cracked me up. Mm-hmm. Kylo Ren has killed billions of people. But your mama says, go bring our boy home. We just want him home for dinner. It's like, bitch, no, we can say, no, you need to go kill him. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a point where you have to look at your child and say, we messed up. Something went wrong, and he is the enemy. I mean, he's killed billions. Mm-hmm. But you want to, we can still bring, no, you can't. You cannot bring him back.
We can rebuild
him. We can rebuild him.
We can make him better. And then, like the bionic woman right, or something.
Exactly. And then as a parent, Han Solo's like, I can go talk. No.
And then go for Han Solo to go out on the precipice, which I was like, oh, danger. This is not going
to. Oh, he's about
go.
To die.
Oh, first of all, I mean, the fact that Kylo Ren he initially senses Solo.
And, you then know, he
like, and then he can't. I'm just like, okay. But so we've got Harrison Ford and Adam Driver out on this precipice, whatever. And I was like, this is going to go one or two ways. Somebody's going to die. Somebody's going to go over the side. And I'm hoping it's Emo Boy, but it ended up not being.
Right.
But to me, despite Harrison Ford always having issues with the character, Han Solo is an icon.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And he should not have gone out stabbed by his emo, his weak emo son.
His entitled bratty little son.
And he falls into
and
eternity.
And falls down. I'm like, man, the Emperor didn't even go out that bad.
I mean, have it something like dramatic and heroic.
Blaze the glory with him and Chewbacca.
I got to be one
he
to
sacrifices himself.
Yeah.
Sacrifice myself.
Like, yeah. I'll fly into the Star Killer and blow it up. And that's the last we see of Han Solo. Yeah. And that will give some closure to me as someone who, when I saw Empire Strikes Back in the theater, at Sunrise Multiplex in New York.
She said, remember.
Yes.
Oh, yes. I remember the day. When they put him in the carbon freeze, was traumatic. I could not watch that scene for about 10 years after that.
Yeah.
I would skip through it or I would leave the room because I could not take them putting.
By the way, skip, we're talking about a VCR just for y'all who don't know.
Yeah. That last moment.
I love you, I know. And then he goes in, it's like, oh, it's one of those moments.
And that I love you, I know was improvised on the set, on the day. Okay. Was not in the script.
Wow.
You know, but now I can watch the movie complete. But I mean, when they did this to Han Solo, I was like, I can't. I just can't.
Right.
And we had gone with my neighbor. Oh my goodness, I'm going back. We had gone with my neighbor from down the street. This is in Queens, New York. People listening, whatever. And she laughed through that scene.
She laughed?
She laughed through the scene. This chick, her name was Gita.
Gita, you're going to get punched.
She's no longer with us. She laughed through that scene. And I remember that was when I realized it's like, I love this, what's on the screen.
Right.
And for you to laugh at it, you're dead to me.
I never spoke to her again. Did you?
I was like, chick, you're dead to me.
This is a moment.
How could you? And that was probably the beginnings of this movie thing. Maybe I'll do this as a career or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, you know, a little segue about the Sunrise Multiplex. Mm-hmm. So it opened as like a six screener, and I want to say 79. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Empire Strikes Back came out in 80. And it was around for a long time, but they made it into like a multiplex, like 12 screener. Mm-hmm. Around 1990, you mentioned The Godfather earlier. That's the place where they had that shooting with Godfather 3. And it was one of the first movie theaters to put metal detectors in and have all this drama and all that.
Right.
And I went back over Christmas, and that place has been leveled. Bulldozed. Really? It is gone.
Wow.
Yeah. And I'm like, a piece of my heart was like, oh, you know.
It's being Han Solo. And
Empire Strike. I mean, I saw so many good movies there, you know, and so many bad movies too, you know, but it's just like, oh, it's gone. We couldn't keep it. It didn't survive, you know.
Well, let me ask you, with our criticism things, and a lot of what you guys said, I totally agree with, but like I said, the nostalgia factor trumps the little nitpickings that I see, you know, just because it was just fun and because the parents who grew up with it and they brought their kids. And to me, it was just like, it was like that pop cultural moment. It wasn't about whether it was like the perfect script, because even though I just like you guys, and like, really, nigga, you the sanitation person?
Right.
Really, you going to have him be knocked out at the end? Really?
And
you've been looking for your brother, but you're gonna send this half of you just met.
And really quick, Finn was used a lot as comedic relief. I was like, yes. We have the black character, but we're still using
Kevin
him.
Yes.
We're still using him as comedic relief and the saucy attitude or whatever. Mm-hmm.
And like, I think there was many times where I thought they were on that borderline of that whole comic relief.
Comedy. There was a little bit too much comedy for me, period. Uh-huh. But I think that's to Disney-fy it up.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it might be also to make people comfortable with the black lead character, because that's how most people want. Yeah. You know, we like our black people funny and safe.
Because Han Solo's whole
He's always had a dry wit. Yeah. Always with a dry wit.
Right.
And even Leia's like, somebody's got to save us, kids. Right. Bang. You know.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Where's that moxie feistiness?
There's an argument, and people were talking about on Twitter, where somebody was saying that, you know, Finn was a magical Negro, and I was like, no, you don't know what magical Negro means. I can understand if you say comic relief.
Yes.
But a magical Negro, for those of you who don't understand, a magical Negro is a black character in any film genre where their whole purpose is to be self-sacrificing and helping the main white character.
Yes.
No matter what else is going on in their life, they are working to sacrifice themselves to help make the white character's
life
better.
An example,
the most notorious example is Will Smith.
I was about to say that Will Smith movie.
Driving Matt Damon.
Yeah, that.
The golfing movie.
I call it Driving Matt Damon.
No, it's
But it's called no. It's what is that movie called? I can't even remember the name of it. But anyway, it's Will Smith. Oh God, is it something swing? The audience.
They run on TBS all the time.
Anyway,
and I would know.
So in that one, here, mind you, the time period is 1930s America. During this time,
The Legend of Bagger Vance. That's
thank it. You.
She pulls it out. Pulls it out.
I was about to say The Diary of Something.
Oh. You know what's so funny? I should know that name, but because when I first saw it, I started calling Driving Matt Damon, and I forgot the total name. So in my head, Bagger Vance is always Driving Matt Damon.
That's funny.
But that is a perfect example, because it's 1930s America.
Mm-hmm.
Black people were being lynched. We just got out of depression. There's a lot of bullshit that's going on with black people. But a black angel comes all the way down to help a white golfer perfect his golf swing, and nothing else.
And
not his people,
yeah.
You know, or that kind of thing, you know. Or another good example would be The Green Mile with John Coffey's character. So a magical Negro, just understand this, their character's only purpose and intent of being there, another example is The Shining, is to help facilitate the narrative and the agency of the white character. Oftentimes, they are also magical Negro can slide into sacrificial Negro, which is basically they sacrifice their whole life for the betterment of the white people. So I'm going to say Finn is not a magical Negro.
No, he wasn't at all. At the very beginning,
his whole point was, I need to get the fuck up out of these people.
Which was compelling.
Yes.
Yeah. When Kylo Ren gives that look to the stormtrooper, Finn in the with the blood on his helmet. I was like, this is good.
I loved that moment.
And
it's when it's like, wow, this is someone who has a conscience.
Yes,
someone
he's
who's
different
changing.
From the others.
Right.
And haven't we all been different
and
in some capacity?
And his whole point is to preserve himself.
Sure.
Right. And along the way, he learns to make friends and that stuff. And it did slide into a lot of comic, like, he's getting a little too comic reliefy.
Jokey.
Too jokey. You know, let's kind of make him the new Han Solo if we must, but let's kind of keep
that's
it.
Exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah.
They're making him be the
as
they killed him with, he's him.
Yeah. But
to some extent.
Have more sardonic, kind of dry.
Yeah. Dry wit.
Not so much.
But there will never be another Han Solo.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, and again, this movie tried to recreate so many things. The Mos Eisley of it all, they tried to recreate that when Han Solo is leading them into this bar. And it's like, hey, just don't stare.
Right.
You go in there, and I was so let down by it. I was like, stop trying to do Mos Eisley. We will never have the sensation again of Luke walking into, you know,
The cantina.
That cantina and the bar scene, the aliens, and the eyes. That will, you can't. Yeah. Can't redo that, so please stop.
They tried with the Jamaican bait.
Oh, God.
I was like, no, they didn't. Come on now.
And question, why was the lightsaber, because I had to take a little bathroom break, then I came back, and I came back, and Rey the lightsaber was calling to her or something, and she was having these visions. I was like, well, when does a lightsaber ever have that kind of pull on someone?
I think what I felt like, they were making her like the ultimate
Jedi.
Like, she's more powerful than Luke. Eventually,
who are her parents? You know what I mean? Where did she? Because I assume that she was Luke's daughter, is what I sort of gathered. then who did Luke mate with? I mean, someone more powerful than freaking Yoda?
Him and his sister finally got it in.
Don't do that.
I don't think she is, because the impression I got, I don't feel like she, because I think they would know. Because why would you put your own child on a deserted desert
somebody
planet,
put him on his
like
parents
you did. Yeah, but you got a sister way. Your sister's a freaking general.
But he didn't know she was his sister though, remember?
No, I'm talking about right now.
Now
you have a child, you got, who better not to give it to your sister?
And maybe that's why Leia was hugging her, because she put it all together.
That was exactly
could
what
be
I was
that's what I was thinking
could be
yes. Yeah,
but wouldn't you go with her to go see your brother?
Yeah. Well, you know, again, there were things that just did not make sense to me. Right. Where I was like,
well, let's transition to the Hateful Eight.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So
what had happened was, go ahead.
I couldn't watch the whole movie.
Wow.
I couldn't watch
it. Wow.
Did you get up and leave?
Yeah.
Wow.
I left about 60 minutes. I don't even remember where it was.
You said
I left.
60 minutes
wow.
in.
Yeah. Wow.
I left about an hour.
Okay,
in.
So tell us.
I was just bored.
Yes.
It was
wow.
beautiful.
It was gorgeous.
Actually, I saw some flaws in there.
Oh,
cinematically, mm-hmm, like mm-hmm. just different shots. Like when it first started, you know, I love that whole slow pan from that
love
picture
that.
Of Jesus.
Love
or whatever.
That. The cross.
That was beautiful.
Love that. In you the know? Snow.
And then all of a sudden you see this little thing coming in the, you know,
love
it was cinematically.
And then it became a play when it went indoors and stayed indoors. How are you going to have fucking 70 millimeter?
Here's what I felt.
Been in there.
Mm-hmm. Everybody knows I'm a huge Tarantino fan.
Mm-hmm.
He's in that lane where we talk about different writers who we know who are super successful.
Mm-hmm.
Tyler Perry. I'm just going to say it. I said a bitch.
Tyler Perry is successful.
Nobody's telling him no.
Thank right. you.
Nobody's
sure.
saying,
thank you.
I don't think that's going to
sure.
work.
Thank you. Sure.
Nobody's saying, this scene is sure. kind of going on a little
yeah.
too long.
That's what
long.
Happens when you got those psychophants who are your friends who are afraid yeah. to tell you, dude,
well,
dude.
Yes, man, everywhere.
Well, let's take it back a little bit, because my first time I heard about The Hateful Eight was, I want to say, like a year and a half ago, where he'd written a script, mm-hmm. right?
I got leaked.
And he had invited his actor buddies over to his home to read it out loud. And he had invited some high-level actors over
most
to
of the
his,
people in the movie were in there.
Over to his house to uh-huh. read it. And somehow it got leaked on the internet. He threw a tantrum. He got all mad. And then he did a live reading of the script.
Mm-hmm.
Probably at like LACMA, one of those other places or whatever, and charged. It was an exorbitant fee mm-hmm. to me to get in.
Did you go?
I did not go, because I'm like, I'm not paying that. I was like, I've never been that big of a Tarantino fan. Yeah. I respect his work, but to me, it's not really something that connects with me personally.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like I've been hearing about this goddamn movie for like 3 years now, mm-hmm. the up and down of the script leaked, and he's mad. Now we're gonna do a live read, and so they're finally doing the thing, and I left with mixed emotions.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like there were some screenwriting things done that he's doing at his level. Mm-hmm. That if anyone in this room did,
you would not.
We'd be in the pass pile.
Thank you.
For example, I don't know if you stayed till this part, but I'm watching the movie. Then we get to chapter four.
It was around chapter four.
And then this voiceover begins.
Girl,
come on. Yes. The voiceover
how
begins.
You don't have a voiceover coming in the middle of the movie.
And I'm like, who is doing this voiceover? What POV is this voiceover? Is this someone? Is this someone in the
come on
minis?
You can't bring
minis.
A gimmick in. Late.
Wait. My friend left to go get to, you know, because she had the 10-minute little intermission. So she had to go to the bathroom.
I didn't have that.
You had a 10-minute intermission?
Wait, y'all didn't have it?
No, I did not.
We had the. I was in La Jolla.
What time was that?
Didn't you get the fancy little? Did you get the little program?
No.
Y'all didn't get the program?
No. It's fine. It's fine. I paid $6.50 for my movie, so I was doing.
We had like a
matinee.
Right, the last part, the last scene with Samuel Jackson and the naked white dude.
Okay.
That scene. Not to give that.
Oh, by the way, spoiler alert. You know, if you haven't seen Hateful Eight,
The scene where
this has been out for a couple weeks.
Yeah, yeah. They gave us a 10-minute intermission, so they stopped the film.
Mm-hmm.
You had 10 minutes to walk out, go to bathroom.
That's phenomenal.
Well, that's like 1948 type of
shit.
It's the arc light. No, they had. You guys seen the overture?
Wow.
Damn, y'all didn't get the overture,
what was
the opening?
What was it?
Before the movie showed, they had a nice opening overture, but the whole sound with the music and the orchestral score.
Oh, no, we didn't.
So that was like 10 minutes long, and then the movie started, and then you had the intermission, and then we had the music again when we came back. Girl, I got cappuccino. I went and got my little program.
It's 3 hours in the end.
Came back in and sat down. So when my friend came back in, and she was like, There's a voice. There was no voiceover in the beginning. We came. What's going on?
Who is doing the voiceover?
Whose voice is that?
And it happens twice. They never explained it. It's just some omniscient voiceover that comes. It's like,
this is why
I'm going to tell you how the poison got in the coffee cup.
He couldn't explain around the mystery of all that stuff. He had to have someone tell the audience.
He added it probably after the
script. Had to have someone tell us what was going on. I don't think you could have shown that scene where. You could have.
You could have had
her viewpoint. Just saw him doing that, and then have her.
You overlap this. You repeat the scene. Yes. You overlap, and you take it from when Samuel Jackson's about to shoot the Bruce Dern character, and then you go, and then you do it from the Jennifer Jason Leigh's character POV.
Domagru.
You start from her POV where she sees the hand putting it in there, and then you pick up the rest.
Right.
I didn't need it.
Mm. Right. Right.
And then it comes back again later on. I'm like, wait, why?
Yeah.
Okay, that was screenwriting thing number one. Where I was like. Mm-hmm. If I did that,
and
that
we're
would
fans
be...
of voiceovers, let's just get that clear.
Yeah, voiceover, voiceover used properly,
yes,
and consistently.
Consistently, correct. Yes.
The other thing I felt like was after we get a long conversation to get Samuel Jackson onto the stagecoach.
That damn
stagecoach.
Yes.
Very long conversation. And then when we're on the stagecoach, there's a lot of expos on people's backstory, and Samuel Jackson was fought in the Civil War.
Mm-hmm. Like, that's the first
major,
the
first, Major Warren, I think was his character's name. Major Warren, and what I found too convenient is too many characters knew each other's. Oh, I know your name. You're that guy who did that. Yeah. Da, 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 da. Yeah. But yet no
one
knows.
Which was their way to tell you the expo.
Right. Yes. Right. But then no one knew why 10,000 grand was demanded of Domagru.
But you know everybody's backstory, like the Civil War. And, the guy that did that. But you don't know this heifer here?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You don't know this heifer? Mm-hmm. I feel like Q2 ain't got no real friends. Because if I was his friend... And he was saying, Lisa, I want you to watch this rough draft. Mm-hmm. First of all, it shouldn't take that fucking long for you to get Samuel Jackson's ass. Then we got to do the same shit again when the other dude shows up. And then you seem to be so fascinated with the word nigga. I don't have no... Hey, a well-placed nigga. A well-placed nigga.
I don't have a problem with it.
Can be worked well.
Yes.
But when your whole focal point is white people getting ready to say it, not because it moves the story forward, and you have like this long epic monologue for it seems like every time Sam Jackson showed up, another white person had to have their whole, that's nigger, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Like I said, a well-placed nigger.
I'm not getting in that damn cage coach with that
but
damn...
But you don't need 30 minutes.
Is he out there, niggers out there that fought in the war, is in the barn, the horses?
It's dude, we get it. Yes, you have some issues, but here's the thing. You're giving too much time for the dialogue of them getting over the fact that it's a black dude. The story is not moving. The whole time I'm sitting here going, when is the story going
here's
to
the
start?
Thing. And you didn't stay.
I am fucking That's 2 hours
here's,
in.
Here's the thing.
Four I'm 2 hours
went,
in.
Like, let's go.
Yeah. Here's the thing. And you didn't stay for this part because they get to, I want to say, 3/4 of the way through the movie. Then you see who Minnie's.
Yes, they go back.
Minnie's haberdasher. You see who Minnie is. Minnie is a black woman.
Yes.
Okay, yes. That Hilliard,
there
for
two
people
black
at home,
women in the movie.
Hilliard just did a reaction.
And another,
you know, like, what?
Yes.
Okay. So Minnie's is run by an African-American woman, and then she has another
black woman
in there who's like plucking a chicken.
Right, right.
So I'm like, why this is a lot of chickens? For me, I'm sitting there like, this is a lot of black people in Wyoming right here. Like, did we ever have this many black people in Wyoming?
No.
And for a black woman to own a business in Wyoming, I'm sitting there like, I don't know.
And
although it is the equal rights state.
Right.
It always has been.
Right, right.
So, and they were the first state to grant women, or Colorado or Wyoming was one of the first to grant women the right to vote. Mm-hmm. So they were a little bit progressive out there.
Right.
I'm not going to take that away from them. But for everyone to be so caught up on Samuel Jackson being black, but you're going to stay at this haberdashery that's run by a black woman.
Two, and another black woman working there, and a black guy that's working there also who's doing the horses, and you saying nigga to them?
Yeah.
Like when they went in the flashback, wasn't nobody up
in their face? Nobody was up in their face at all.
You know, this bitch half a neck.
Matter of fact, you brought Channing Tatum in, for what reason, I don't know.
I didn't get to that part.
Is speaking French to Minnie, like, you know, parlez-vous français, I'm Magic Mike type
thing. Yeah. Another thing. Not only was Minnie black, but they had her saying that Minnie, because the whole time they kept saying, well, you know, no Mexicans will be up in here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Minnie hates Mexican people. And then you see that she's black, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. But my thing is this. How many Mexicans were going up to Wyoming? Cattle runs down south, because I know this stuff. I studied this stuff, you know. And as a black person, when you see another person, and I'd be different if he was Native American and she might have had some issues with Native stuff.
Right, scalping and that.
For a random Mexican dude to be up there and for her to have a sign that, like,
no dogs and no Mexicans.
Like, how many Mexicans is coming to Wyoming in 1865, 1866? There's like certain things like, Do you need some people to come tell you some history? Yes. Or even if that did happen, give us some other clues or social things to kind of explain that a little bit, because that didn't ring true to me. It'd be different if it was a white
chick. That's got to do with setting up the room in the story.
But as a black woman, running a place, making money, you ain't going to be racist like that. That's good money you throwing away. Like, some Mexicans want to come up here, bitch, I may not like you, but I'm getting that money.
The other thing I had an issue with many was, and all the women in that segment of the piece, was none of them were smart. Okay. Minnie is letting people come in off a stagecoach,
and you
people
of questionable
character, and you're not taking their guns, you're not checking their rifle, you're not checking any of their weapons. Yeah. You're just letting them run around your haberdashery, just willy nilly, so they can shoot you.
I would have had some dudes posted up, like you got.
She would have someone take the weapons.
She would have a husband. She would have some sons, some big ass sons. She would have some people there. Whose first thing is like, who you is.
Yeah.
No, and you're a black woman?
Yes.
After the Civil
War? You would be very secure. You would lock down in haberdashery. And she didn't. She just sort of, come on in, Channing Tatum and Tim Roth, and, you know, hang out and shoot me.
Y'all. And y'all look shifty anyway, please. Quentin, you need to make friends with me, because I'm going to let you know.
The other disappointing character for me in that segment was there was a Jody, and she had on, she had an accent, like an Australian accent.
Yeah, she was from Australia.
And she could drive the six-horse wagon or whatever. And I was like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
But that chick didn't have a weapon on her either, because everybody just gets slaughtered. And she's just like shot in cold blood. I was like, this chick can drive.
You drive a stagecoach.
Right.
Everybody has a
sidearm.
Even the guy you meet at the top has a shotgun across his...
Right. Because you never know when someone's going to roll up on your stagecoach, particularly in a blizzard, and try and freaking, you know,
and
rob
I will
you.
Say this, though. That segment when Minnem showed up, that's when it kind of picked up for me. Like, it kind of came alive a little bit, and then it was over. And it was like, I'm not so sure. But it was just so boring.
Let's talk about how far in the story. You're already past page 50. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Nothing
before this
really
happens.
Starts to happen, like almost an hour. And
what chapter are we in now? Because I stopped around chapter 4.
I think that was like, I mean, they stopped calling it. I don't know if he changed the name. Maybe they weren't chapters anymore. But I felt like that was around chapter
something situation
when he went back and said, "Okay,
look how long that is."
Early this morning. This is when the other stagecoach arrived. Yeah. And here's
one of the things that I've always really enjoyed about Quentin's work. I don't like all of it, but I do. I always get something from it in terms of dialogue. The dialogue is always doing something. Mm-hmm. I felt like in this script, this was his weakest writing.
Definitely.
It was his weakest. Mm-hmm. I was disappointed, because I don't mind, like, I'm going to let y'all know right now, I don't mind 3-hour movies.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If it's popping, I can watch, this is the queen of binge watching. Mm-hmm. I can watch some shit. Yeah. It took so long. I was so bored. None of the dialogue. It'd be different if we're going to have this conversation every time we see Samuel Jackson. Mm-hmm. We got to say, I don't have, like I said, a well-placed nigga.
Yeah.
If it's moving the story along, we're going to work with it.
Yeah.
We're just going to work with it. There was not. It was the most boring writing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There was nothing to keep my attention. Mm-hmm. It didn't even matter that it was Sam Jackson, all these big name actors. I was even trying to think to myself, what would I have done? Would maybe casting unknowns would have helped us a little bit?
It wouldn't have made a difference at all as far as if you would have been. There's no reason you couldn't, is what I'm saying.
There was nothing. Even at the end.
Sam did not need to play that character.
Right. Even at the end.
Yeah.
I wasn't even that prepped. I was just so done. It's like, I didn't care.
I just wanted it over.
I just wanted to leave. But yeah. I'm here. I'm going to do it. Whatever.
I'm 3 hours
the
in.
The best description of the movie was from my friend, Sam Miller. Hey, Sam.
It's only made $40-something million.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Sam saw it, and me and Sam were both horror fanatics. And hey, Sam, he was my Clarion roommate and one of the baddest. I'm telling you, if you want to read some science fiction and horror writing, you look up Sam Joshua Miller, Sam J. Miller, one of the baddest writers out there coming out.
Sounds like a writer.
Yeah, Sam J. Miller.
Sam J. Miller. He is no joke. We were on Facebook, and we were talking about we had saw it. He says, you know, Hateful Eight is a great remake of The Thing.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Which all these, which I just learned,
is a character like a motherfucker.
Yeah, in the Wild Wild West. When he said that, it made sense because I felt like, damn, maybe he would have made this a horror movie. It would have been better. Mm. But it was like, it had those everything about it. If you've seen the movie, 1982 version of The Thing.
Yes,
this movie would exactly even the ending with the white dude and the black dude both sitting there, the whole trying to figure out who was who. It was, but it just, I'm not shocked, but I'm really, really find it interesting that a lot of people are coming out watching this movie talking about, oh, it's just best, it's this. It's like,
I don't think so.
The script is horrible.
Very talky, expository.
Which is my problem.
Yes. Expository. Yeah. Listen, children.
Tell them.
Look, babies. The expository information in the script, it's not bad. You can have exposure, mm-hmm. but you've got to have a way.
You've got to be clever.
Yes, you have to be clever with it. And you also have to have a couple of things happening at the same time. Everybody always talks about the best example of expository writing. If you think about Indiana Jones. There's a scene where there's, I can't remember.
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
The guys are coming.
Like, they need to explain what the ark is.
Right.
And it's for these little yahoos that come in that want to hire him, but it's also for the audience to
know. There's a lot of information that's being given as expository.
But it's visual.
It's visual. It's done in a way where they're giving you a lot of info. They're info-dumping. But at the same time, the story is
moves forward.
There's another tension going on.
Yes.
Yeah, that's
everything in this movie.
And some people asking questions, you know, as Harrison Ford, as Indy is talking. Yeah, it's engaging.
The expository stuff in here, like when there was a scene they were talking about what Sam Jackson was in the Civil War. And he did. I would have rather visually watched that.
Yeah, yes. I don't understand.
I thought they were, I kept waiting for the flashback to that.
Yes.
I kept waiting for that. Okay, go shoot that.
I would rather see that than have you sitting on this long ass, like, bitch, is we getting to where we're supposed to be getting?
Talking about exposition. So one of the issues I had with it is exactly what you're talking about, because the way I was taught about the way to give exposition is to, like, for instance, he shows up with Kurt Russell. Kurt Russell looks at him. He could tell by the way he's dressed. Let me tell you about yourself. Let me tell you who you are.
Yeah.
They tell
you. I'm gonna read you.
Are. Right. They read you. Your rights.
Right.
They tell, or you're like, it could be. It could be a rom-com, and your best friend is like, you know what your problem is?
Yeah.
You haven't been on a date in 2
years.
Right. You know what I mean?
Right.
They go in on you. Yeah. You learn about them as opposed to them going, well, I was in the Civil War.
Because we know Kurt Russell has interacted with him with, you know, in some capacity, in Memphis, or whatever, wherever this letter was exchanged.
We don't need him to say it.
Right.
Let the other guy tell you about yourself.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I agree. Yeah. I totally agree. I was like, this is very on the nose.
It was so on the nose.
And I'm honestly, I'm kind of embarrassed because I feel like
embarrassed, Lisa. Come on.
She got to run into Quentin tomorrow.
You're embarrassed to have that $10 million check in your bank account or whatever it is.
I'm embarrassed to have to sit with Quentin and be like, baby, get you some new friends.
Well, and it goes back to what I was saying, you know, earlier was there was a process where you had actors over, you had a live read, and no one along this food chain pulled you aside and said,
they want that QT stamp. They want that kind of edgy thing.
See, QT means Quick Trip back for those of us who lived in the Midwest at all. That's a nice little,
You know, I get embarrassed when writers who have done some great writing, where I respect
They fall back.
Where they kind of, I feel like.
Okay, he won an Oscar last year, bitch. Okay, let's talk about that.
Like,
Last year or the year before?
I think the year before. For Inglourious Basterds, maybe?
For best. And deservedly so. That dialogue was popping.
But see, that was a completely different script.
Yeah.
And the way that he was using it.
Right.
You know?
I mean, the only fix I can say for this movie is, and he's not going to ever do it, you got to edit that down shit. You got to make that shit quick.
Nothing needs to be 3 hours. I feel your point on you could watch a movie 3 hours
if it's compelling. If it pulls you through the story.
But why? You still have to figure out why. Why does it even need to be 3 hours?
And here's the other thing. Here's something like a plot hole or just something that kind of afterwards I was like, that doesn't make sense. So from the time, so very early on in the movie, Samuel Jackson gets there and he knows Minnie. Okay. Right. So he also knows Minnie.
Yeah.
Great. We all kind
of
know each other. You know, again, those coincidences.
Punched the shit out of her though, but that was cool.
No, Minnie's haberdashery.
Yeah.
Who you never saw.
Yeah.
The owner of the little rest stop that they're at. So he knew Minnie. So he knew that Minnie, you know, liked her tobacco a certain way because he starts questioning the Mexican in the barn.
Right.
So, but from then on, he knows something's up, right? Okay, you know something's up.
And you ain't shooting up all
You know something's up in this haberdashery.
Right.
But for 2 hours, you know, we're sitting here watching you play through this little scene with the other characters. You don't ever check you don't search the place top to bottom. Why is Channing Tatum in the basement gonna shoot you in the cojones? If you knew something was up, you're checking that entire facility with your gun.
You're trying to get an
There's
ally
no way.
Or I would have pulled Kurt Russell, like, dude, I'm just letting you know, this something's not right. You out of
And he's
yada.
A bounty hunter. He's supposed to be somebody who looks for stuff like that.
Yeah, so you would have been searching that place and you would have found Magic Mike in the basement with the gun so you didn't get shot later. I didn't buy that at all.
Right. You said Magic Mike's in the basement.
I mean, no offense to Channing Tatum, because I mean he's allowed to do a variety of work.
I tell you what, I was glad he wasn't in the movie that long because I was like, as soon as he popped in, like, oh hell, here we go.
I just didn't.
And then it was done. Okay, good.
I just didn't. I was like, Channing Tatum, Quentin Tarantino.
That's
I'm
like
not.
A joke.
I'm not.
To me,
I don't get it.
That's like, oh, maybe they met, friendly. Oh, Channing Tatum, yeah. People will come yeah. and go see
I got
see
the
it.
Perfect part you should I got, play.
You could play this and yeah. be in it. You could be in one of my movies. Yeah.
Like, and all that. This for his sister who's in this gang. And I'm like, the gang, I didn't buy the gang
and
at all.
And the Mexican dude is like, and that cracked me up. Because like every character, their name is based on the skill that they have. Except for the Mexican dude. It's just like the Mexican. Like there's the bounty hunter.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's the, what is it, the judge, the hanging mm-hmm. man.
The hangman.
So these are all the eight?
They're all, yeah. Okay. They're all named after what they do. But the only character who happens to be mm-hmm. Mexican or Latino, he's just the Mexican.
Oh, and I found the dialogue that they did give to the Mexican character was very... like over the top,
it
just
was.
Really stereotypical. You know, I thought the door situation was clever. I was like, I love the presence of the blizzard was always felt because mm-hmm. when the door nice. Flew open,
and it was great foreshadowing.
Yes,
I think I left when they were starting to hammer.
Yeah,
something
you had to hammer.
They had to keep nailing. Yeah. You know, the door closed, yeah. and I thought that was. And I also appreciate it. You know, I don't want to just bash the movie. There were some good things about it that I'm going to put in my directing. You know, mind mm-hmm. in terms of. There was always something happening in the background because mm-hmm. when you're in that confined space yes. for so long, you know, we've got the coffee pot in the foreground, mm-hmm. but, you know, Bruce Dern's in the right. background talking to somebody right. and right. there's always something happening. Mm-hmm. So I was right. like, I appreciate that. I thought that was very well done.
Let me ask
what's
you
his
this?
Name? Tim Roth. Tim Roth. That's just really quick. One of the things I was happy to see, because to me, he's like the best fucking Cockney, right, besides Michael Caine. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, he got a nice little middle class accent on. That's I've never seen
yes.
that before from mm-hmm. him.
Yes.
That was bad.
Well, there was a lot of think pieces and things written up. Even in our bitch flicks, we had a guest post by a writer that was talking about the Domagoo character, which I really enjoyed that post because one of the criticisms it had was they were saying how the Domagoo character was, they say that it was kind of sexist towards her because she was like getting beat all the time. Right. And some people didn't like the way she was treated. They felt like, oh, you guys are too misogynistic. But here's my opinion. Because mm-hmm. when we were sitting here, me and my friend Taj, mm-hmm. we had a Chicago moment. When the moment that she opened her mouth and said, when they were on the chase coach, and of course, you know, Sam Jackson character's like, wait, Sam Jackson character's like, oh, well, here's this woman. Okay, obviously she's done something terrible. Mm-hmm. But the moment she opened her mouth and said, well, this nigga, blah, 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 mm-hmm. me and her is like, and when he popped her mm-hmm. and she kept getting popped, me and Todd were like, she had it coming.
Oh, you meant Chicago like the musical.
Yes.
Okay. When you said Chicago movement, I'm like, oh, okay, we're going to take the South Side.
I'm talking about the music
okay,
of Chicago.
Got it.
Like, she had it coming.
Very good musical. One of my favorites.
He went all Fosse, Fosse, Fosse.
And people always say this, and it's like, there's not a problem when there's, for me, I'm just saying this is my opinion, and mm-hmm. I think a lot of people really need to reconsider this because they get really ultra-sensitive about things. When we talk about violence against women characters, mm-hmm. there's ways that, yes, there are some movies that do things where it's just misogynistic, gratuitous, sure. really not the point.
Sure.
But in this case, this bitch was taking it like a G, mm-hmm. okay?
And then laughing. She was laughing about it, smiling.
And I didn't feel sorry for her. It was mm-hmm. a great character.
And she felt very. She felt creepy to me. When she's yeah. in that stagecoach and she's been popping yes. and she's smiling
who
in your
who
face.
Who was that character? Who was that?
Remember
I couldn't
Jennifer
see.
Jason Lee?
Oh, that's right.
Domagoo.
Yeah. Okay.
She wasn't sexualized.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, most situations like that, they have the woman. Guys would make sexual comments like, oh, we can get loose. Mm-hmm. Oh, none of that came up.
Yeah.
There was nothing in terms of questioning her sexuality, being a female and being a gangster thug. No one questioned that. She was part of the clique. Okay. And even at the end, and once again, spoiler alert, mm-hmm. when, you know, they killed her, hung her. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a moment where I felt like, oh, that's just so horrible. They're doing mm-hmm. that to her. I'm like, no, that bitch had it coming. And I probably would have been the one doing that.
And she was going to
She was supposed to hang anyway.
Yeah.
So I'm really curious to know what you guys' opinion in terms of when you were watching it mm-hmm. for the parts that you saw. Did you feel like, oh my gosh, this is kind of like rough for her?
I cringed. I'm not going to lie. Every time a woman takes a punch on screen, mm-hmm. I cringe personally mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. I know that there is so much violence you know, in the world against women.
Mm-hmm.
So I was cringing at that, but also we talked about the N word earlier. We kind of glossed over it, and I know you want to go mm-hmm. back to that. I felt the word bitch was used quite a bit in the movie. Lace, and I was like, mm-hmm. do we really need it that much? I mean, we mm-hmm. get it; she's a female,
right.
but we don't need to every word
overdone.
Was bitch,
right.
bitch. Mm-hmm. I was like, really?
This bitch. Like, we get it.
And I felt when the blood was coming out of her face, it harkened an earlier movie of Tarantino's, you know, True Romance.
Yeah.
There's a scene in there where somebody fights James Gandolfini, a small, petite blonde, fights James, and the fight does not go well for her.
Patricia Arquette.
Yes. Yeah. It does not go well for her until the very end. And so you watch this woman just get bloodied and battered. And I'm like, this is a thing with him.
Mm-hmm.
These women bloodied, battered.
Well, look at Kill Bill. I mean,
Yeah. So I'm still not okay with violence against women on camera all the time, but I see why it was done. Right. I wasn't about to walk out of the movie because I saw that, but I was about to walk out when I heard that voiceover. I was like, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who is this?
So the parts that you saw that when you
So the parts that I saw
with the woman character.
I was more like, because I think I can't remember, you guys saw it better than I did. I thought the first time Kurt Russell hit Jennifer Jason Leigh, I thought he elbowed her. And I didn't see it. I was like, did he just fucking hit her? And she was like, you know what I mean? She covered her mouth. Obviously, she got hit. Mm-hmm. And then later on, I think he punched her like twice before Samuel Jackson actually punches her, and they go flying out the
She spits on the letter.
Right.
And, yeah. But see, that was deservingly.
Oh, agreed.
Yeah. And maybe, and I remember asking Scott, I don't really, maybe because I'm not, you know, Mr. Historic or anything, but I didn't quite understand what was in the letter so much that was moving Kurt almost to tears and shit.
Well, I think it's because he might have been like a Union soldier and he had fought the good war.
Okay.
And like when Abraham did, you know, did the famous speech, the Gettysburg Address, and really tried to keep the nation. I felt like it was one of those moments, those white man Union soldier moments where that was his president, and like
he got a letter from him. I'd be like us getting a letter from Barack Obama right now, or, you know.
And if you have been supportive, that's supportive of that president, and emotionally, like, you know, and especially you got to remember that Civil War was
hard,
horrendous,
hard.
People lost their own family members who fought against
on different
each
sides.
Other. So to get a letter from the president who was trying to hold the union together, I totally bought that.
Yes,
the emotional content.
It was a nice moment for Kurt because I love Kurt.
Yeah, and then later on the parts.
I thought the letter was was something that worked in the piece.
It was a symbol. Yeah. It was a symbol of something. It was nice.
And of course, you missed the part later when they found out that the letter.
Well, and Samuel Jackson explains that it's fake, and here's why: because he uses it to disarm white people because if I show you this letter. Now you're comfortable with this big black man. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, hey, I fought for the union. The president liked me enough to write me these letters. You know, there's a sentimentality to it. Like, I'm taking y'all down. It's okay. Right. I'm not gonna, you know, don't hide your wife from, you know, all
And then the crushing moment when Kurt Russell, they're in the haberdashery and they're laughing at Kurt Russell because he believed it. The expression on his face, like, that wasn't a letter from our president.
Yeah.
Like, it was like
crushing to the Kurt Russell character.
And it made me wonder, like, why would a black character say that? Like, if you know you wrote a fake letter to get over, why would you tell a room full of white people with guns
that is not
in a blizzard? Oh, it's not real.
I didn't think that should have been revealed to the very end.
That could have been something revealed at the end where he tells him it's not even real.
On his deathbed with the other gentleman. Who, and it's like, I can't remember the actor's name who played Chris Maddox. Mm. I thought he was compelling.
Which one was he?
I liked him. He was going to be the sheriff of Red Rock.
Oh, yeah.
I thought he was
from The Shield.
Oh, is he from The Shield? Okay, I don't watch the show.
Yeah, the dude and
Sons of Anarchy and all that.
Yeah, I thought he was.
I mean, it seems like our fellow, the fact that you walked out an hour in and you're just like, our general consensus is it's not his best.
Let's wrap this up. Yeah, definitely.
But you didn't, you said you were going to talk about the N word.
Yes.
You kept saying,
oh. As it started, of course, it didn't start until, because I don't recall the guy on the stagecoach ever calling him in the N-word. I don't recall.
No.
He didn't.
But as soon as Kurt saw him, boom, he started going in with the word. And I remember turning to Scott.
Were you waiting for the white dude, the stagecoach guy, to say something to him?
I wasn't sure what to expect, but he's remember he said, you got to go ask the guy in the back, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And so I turned to Scott and I went, get ready for it. And he said, what? I says, oh, it's about to go in. Because once he starts, he gets into this zone where we've all done it as writers where we hear a character's voice and sometimes we overlay it with a certain word and the way that they talk all the time. Mm-hmm. And that's what he does. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, the N-word is the strongest word that he uses in his vocabulary to let you know he's making a fucking point.
Oh, we got the biggest laugh in the audience. Of course, me and my friend Todd, we're the only black people in the audience. Mm-hmm. I know this for a fact because we got there like 30 minutes ahead of time and sat in our seats and watched everybody come in. And we was the only two. When the first time that word comes out, the audience lost laugh. They laughed every time the word. But when Sam Jackson said, "Oh, these crackers," we fell out laughing.
You didn't hear
nothing.
Interesting.
Let me just finish my little thing. So what I found, and I said this to Scott as we walked out the door, I said, this is Quentin Tarantino in his most self-indulgent movie I've ever seen, ever.
Well, when you have it in the titles, it's the eighth film by Quentin. I was like,
that was
so pretentious. Why are we counting?
That's the studio.
That was so pretentious. You know?
And then you were just talking about something. What was it about? You just said it a second ago. What were you just talking about?
Oh, when the white people start laughing?
Yes.
Yes.
So one of the things I give Quentin Tarantino credit for on the other side of what I just said about him using the N-word and doing, you know, abusing women and whatever. He always knows how to make, and it's always Samuel Jackson's character, because he's in all his fucking movies pretty much. Samuel always comes back with a comeback against white people in some way.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Several times.
Right.
But that cracker line was the line to me, and I went, oh. So he's saying, see, black audience, they come back on you too.
Right.
That's what I felt. Mm-hmm. You know, because Scott and I were driving, talking about it at the same time. And I was like, that's exactly what he was doing.
Even though the word cracker is not...
No, it's not the same.
It's not powerful.
It's not powerful enough.
No, what was powerful was what happened between the Samuel Jackson character and the son, Bruce Dern's son, which is one of the few flashbacks that we actually got in the whole film in terms of like, hey, let me show you the backstory instead of... just talking having someone doing the expos and sitting in their chair.
But it just seems so, like, to me, the funny part about it, like, and it kept getting more, like, melodramatic, but and then your son was on my... It's like,
we got this idea
of the black male penis being a black person, like, this thing is so terrible. Like, and I did this to the most terrible thing I've done to your son. Isn't this horrible that he sucked this black man's in? I'm just like, really?
Yeah, it could have been shorter.
You could have just said, I shot your son, bitch, you know, and I enjoyed it, you know, as opposed to we got to go through this whole, you know, and of course
I never gave him a blanket.
That's QT being indulgent, you know, and the whole naked white dude walking, you know, and of course.
Bruce and he Dern. Was naked.
Yes. Yeah.
But he was
this
naked.
This goes into.
He looked really cold.
You talking about Samuel?
No.
Oh, Bruce.
The part you missed.
Yeah.
This goes into what we started off by saying when we first started talking about Quentin Tarantino. There is nobody in his camp saying no.
Right.
Right? There's nobody in his camp saying, this feels a little self-indulgent. When you and I read scripts, you're like, this feels a little, you know, I got some notes for you. It's a little heavy on the, what, you know, whatever the fuck. Like, nobody's doing that. You're going, you just won a fucking Oscar. Whatever you fucking say. You know what I mean? You get $3 million a fucking script. Whatever you fucking say. You know what I mean? Instead of going, this could still be better.
Yes.
This could be trimmed. Yes.
And it could have been good. Yes. Like, that's the main reason I wanted to come, because I love those kind of like parlor mysteries where you're trying to figure out who it is. And of course, I love Westerns anyway.
Sure.
And I love, like, I was prepared for like, okay, this is going to be like whodunit, that kind of thing. And, and that's what I went in. And it, like, by the time they started to get to, I didn't care no more.
And well, the fact that you wiped out Minnie and Company in 5 minutes, it would have been great if one of them was somehow left alive, like the Jody who drives a six-horse stagecoach, whatever. Right. If she had some skills to get away, and she, maybe she's going to come back.
She was hiding out somewhere.
Something.
You know?
In the outhouse or whatever, because the outhouse was, I mean, I thought the outhouse was going to play some sort of factor in the story.
Yeah, they kept showing it.
They made it a point to, like, we have to have, which we thought was interesting, you know, I think it's smart. They're going to build a little rabbit trail, you know, out to the outhouse and back, and then also to the barn and back. I was like, I thought the outhouse and the barn were going to come into the story later. They never did. We were just in a haberdashery
because they took so much time to show them, you know, hitting it in the ice.
Yeah, it took a lot of time.
And I'm like, okay, this is going to come back into play, isn't it? It's going
to
come back.
I expected one of those spikes to come out of the ground and in someone's throat.
Yeah, or something. Yeah. It's like you're taking so much time to
set this all up,
you know, and we got to hurry up and get it. And then nothing, there's no payoff for a lot of stuff. So it was very disappointing.
It sounds like he made the trope that we always tell writers when you, in your script, and you're like, interior, John's bedroom, on the walls are this, on the corner is that.
Unless,
you know,
it's going to play.
The bed is made of, you know, Italian silk and blah, 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 and you never fucking use it.
No.
Yeah.
Never.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I just was so floored by how Minnie was run over by these guys on the stagecoach just so quickly. I was like, you have to be a tough woman to be black in Wyoming, to be establishing your business. And I think, like, Dave was her, like, her husband or something.
I think, I don't know if Dave was her husband or her, he might have been an old man.
It was never explained.
And she didn't have a gun.
Nothing.
And it's like, and you're not going to be impressed with somebody speaking French. Are you killing me? All those Canadians, French Canadians coming down through that area.
And you're not checking all these guys or having them check their weapons at the door, but you got a sign that says no dogs and no Mexicans. But you're not going to check people's weapons?
But you can bring your
and you're in the Wild West? And you, it made no sense.
Please.
It made no sense at all.
That's not good.
I found, and again, we talked about the expos. For me, when they were inside the stagecoach, it was the Kurt Russell character, Samuel Jackson, the Chris Maddox character, and Damagoo. I felt like there was just so much expos going on.
It's like, I am backstory. So ready to get out of the stagecoach.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was like claustrophobic. Yeah. And I felt like, what I did appreciate is he uses sound a lot. Mm-hmm. So while we're inside the stage, you can hear the guy. And that was also happening when they're inside the haberdashery sometimes. There was stuff, you could hear the wind outside or the door blows open or whatever.
That was
very
clever.
Good. Right. Very good.
Right.
That's clever.
But
that was well thought of.
Yes.
Which we were talking about when we had Dr.
Nama.
Yeah. Nama on the show, and he was talking about the symbols and things that
symbolism,
he does in his
movies. Right.
He's very good about knowing what to put in a movie so that you feel like you're in that era. Mm-hmm. Like you said, the snow became
another character.
It was another character.
Yeah. And at outhouse,
like, it was one of the main characters. Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah.
The guns were taken apart and dumped in the outhouse. I was like, okay, who's going to go out there and dig in that outhouse and pull the pieces of the guns up and pull them back together? I mean, I just kept waiting for that payoff because I was like, we did all this.
Or something, if you're going to show me 70mm, I want to see some outside beautiful shots. Like, somebody's got to go outside and do something. We're going to stay. Okay, I guess we're going to stay in the building.
We got to shoot it on film, which was gorgeous, but it...
I think it was wasted. Anyway. If you're going to do it, they should have had like Django Unchained, and 70mm, one of his other movies. Just felt like, it was 70, yeah, great, it was pretty, but I felt like if we're going to just be inside... Because I loved like the opening sequences when you see all that.
Yes. It was effective.
It was effective.
It felt like a Western. Right away, it set the tone for the movie.
And he was doing all those long lens, low, looking up high shots. Yeah. I mean, it was
right
beautiful.
Away, it set the tone. And then once we got inside the haberdashery, I was like, I'm trapped on a play stage.
Yeah.
Let me out.
Yeah.
You know.
So on that note, so today we talked about Star Wars and The Hateful Eight. So, you know, you guys can use your own little ideas on what you think or your own reviews. These are our own little personal rant room rants on what we think of these movies.
Hit us up on Twitter and let us know what you think about.
You can go in on Lisa because she'll come back at your funky ass.
Oh, yeah. I'm just saying. Hey. I'm it's 2016.
Well, thank you guys.
Yeah,
thank
no, this is fun.
Yeah. So where you at, Linnell? What can people find?
I am at Linnell White on Twitter, LYNELLEWHITE. And I have started the new year off with two intentions. Write every day and work out every day. And I've been doing it ever since.
You've been doing it.
So, you know, if you guys are with me, hit me up on Twitter. Say, yeah, I'm down. You know, I'm in.
Same. 26, writing, getting back into shape, getting like really, really focused. And I think my focus too also is also signal boosting and supporting a lot more up-and-coming filmmakers, in particular women filmmakers who are coming up and trying to do some things and just really signal boosting and being really a vocal support for them.
Okay.
Because I think there's a lot of new... I feel like there's a lot of new changes that are coming to Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we're at that point where a lot of good things are going to be coming. And I want to make sure I'm like that everybody's favorite auntie that supports them. Like, baby, come on, get up there and do your thing. Go do you.
But what are you going to do for you?
Oh,
yeah,
for me?
Yeah.
Yes.
Good point. Pleasure.
The reason why I asked you that...
Yeah.
Good point.
You and I, and Linnell, we were talking about this yesterday. All of us get caught up in helping everybody.
That's true.
And it's a good thing. I hope we never lose it.
Yeah.
How fucking ever.
No, because it's rewarding you know to your soul.
Right.
Yes. You need that in life.
Yes.
Right.
Feed your soul.
Like we had a guest on, I'm not going to say her name, you guys know, who just left.
Mm-hmm.
And I whispered to her, so do me a favor. If you know anybody on that show that we were talking about, please refer Linnell to that.
Oh, that's so sweet of you.
She says, absolutely. So we'll see what happens. Mm-hmm. You know, but that's what we're supposed to do.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's not my show, but you could write the fuck out of that show. Right? You know what I mean? I could write it. I'd be bored in there. But you know that world, right? And you could handle that shit in your sleep.
Well, for me, in terms of my own writing stuff, I'm going to... finish up this book, and I'm also going to be writing a new screenplay horror one with a friend of mine. I got to get down to New Orleans. One of my favorite people in the whole wide world, Jaretta, who used to star in a lot of the old Italian horror movies like Demons and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. For many years, she and I have been talking about we need to write a horror film.
Mm-hmm.
together that I would love to do. So that's the goal this year, because we love horror and we love that old school, like, bloody, crazy kind of like Italian giallo.
I remember, you know, in the 80s, like, there was My Bloody Valentine, the original. Not they did some remake or whatever. Right. I'm talking, that kind of stuff. That was the horror I grew up on.
The kind of stuff where it's not like the corny horror, like, oh, then we got fun. No, the old school.
Happy Birthday to Me. Do you remember that movie?
Yes. It was a little psychological.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So we're going to try to, because you know, a lot of my family roots, even though on the States it's like French native, the other part of my family is Italian. So we want to, I want to write something with Dreda that takes place in Italy and takes place in New Orleans also.
Oh, okay.
So we're going to try to
see. International. Look at her.
Wow.
No, I'm thinking big, because a lot of people need
2016 is all about thinking big and being big.
And being global and doing some new things. So that's the things I'm actively working on. And, you know, get some more short stories published out there, because too many of my friends are getting Nebula nominated and Hugo stuff, and I'm like, I need to get on that.
Yes, you need to get on that. You know,
you never know when your short becomes a film, and the film becomes a feature film, and then it's a franchise.
Exactly.
You never know.
And this year, you know, I mean, I have a ton of goals, but my number one goal that I have, and I love everybody that I work with and that I help. I got to help myself more.
Yes. Yes.
You
know what
I mean? Do for you.
I literally stop everything to help people all the time.
Self-care
all
for
the time.
Do your stuff.
And I've got to spend more time helping me progress to where I need to go. Mm-hmm. So that I can help people more.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because all I'm doing is doing, you know what I mean?
Stagnation doesn't feel good for anyone.
Yes. Yeah.
It just is like it's a quagmire.
Correct.
I don't like it. Yeah. I hate it.
And my other big goal, which is what Linnell and I've been talking a lot about, is sometimes you got to ask motherfuckers. You and I have been talking about this for years, and I never fucking do it. I got to start asking my friends who are in these high places for shit that I need.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I have the fucking samples to give you, bitch.
Right.
And they ain't like, I don't have nothing.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So anyway, so those are some of the things that I'm doing. I got a bunch of projects. I'm about to direct this documentary. I think I told you guys about the New Dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
So we go back on the 23rd and 24th and back in the studio and shoot a bunch of stuff on the guys.
Okay.
We're interviewing the original Gidget and a whole bunch of people like that. So it's going to be badass.
That's
some of the guys from the Beach Boys.
That's one of my heroes.
Dean Torrance from Jan and Dean. You know, it's like, it's going to be crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So looking forward to it. So the next 2 weeks is just all prep.
Yeah.
You know, getting ready for that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're coming out with Architects of Crime, which I showed you a piece of, with the Derek Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
So that one, we finally got some of the final visual effects and stuff done. So Linnell saw it without the visual effects. And so now
it works
there.
If it works without
it, still works without it.
You know, I learned from the Jeff Melvoin School of Post Production.
Uh-huh.
If it works without the sound, the music sound, or the special effects, then your scene works.
That's a very good sign. That's a very good sign.
Right.
But it looks beautiful. It's badass. So it looks like we're going to be screening at CAA and at the Writers Guild.
Okay.
So we're both working on, they're working on CAA and I'm working on the Writers Guild.
Cool.
Stuff like that. Anyway, so I got a bunch of shit going on.
Awesome.
So anyway,
where are you going with that? Where are you going with that?
Trying to catch back up again. So you guys know how we're doing in the Rant Room. If you guys want to follow me, Hilliard Guest at Screen, Hilliard Guest at on Twitter. I'm tired of shit. You guys can follow the show, Screenwriters RR on Twitter. Please give us a 5-star review and a comment if you like on iTunes, because we need that shit for the Matrix. Like we keep saying, we want to get in that top 10. So we need you guys to be tweeting this shit, you know, and all that stuff. Let people know, you know, this is a show to watch. If you guys have any questions, screenwritersrantroom@gmail.com. And again, thank you to all the countries out there who are listening to us, all the states, all the cities. We love y'all. Keep spreading the word. Keep sharing the show. And we're going to have a new theme song soon. Actually, it might be before we air this episode.
Mm-hmm.
But we got a new ska version of it. It's going to be badass with Jack Spade. What's up, Jack?
Yeah, hey, Jack.
So anyway, y'all know how we do it on the Rant Room. On the show, we keep it real. We keep it opinionated. We keep it what?
2016.
Peace, y'all.
All right.
You wanna
be a rider. Well, you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminishing, the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed. In the rent room, we let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes, that's Mr. Bolakaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the crap of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want.
Welcome to the Red Room.